One of our favorite times of the week here on a Donnie Football Friday, Nick Kostos, host of You Better You Bet, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the You Better You Bet podcast for more analysis. Just search You Better You Bet wherever you find your podcasts. Here we go, Nick. It's one of the biggest weeks of the year. It's Steelers-Ravens. A little bit of a surprise line to me, at least. I don't know the ways of Vegas for the Steelers to be a 3.5, maybe now a 3-point underdog on their own field against a team they have a better record than. What do you make of that? What do you make of this game?
Well, great to be on with you guys. I will not endear myself to you guys or your listeners by saying this. I love the Baltimore Ravens laying 3 in this game. Now, The number has to be 3. There's a big difference between 3 and 3.5. And if you like the Steelers and you want to take 3.5, go for it. I would not suggest betting Steelers +3. I think if you like Pittsburgh, you will get an opportunity to bet 3.5. Huge difference between those two bets. When I handicap this game, I think Alex Highsmith, his loss will be felt here for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do we know if Jaylen Warren's going to be good to go in this game? I know he was added to the injury report yesterday. We haven't seen today's injury report yet. No. I haven't seen any reporting there.
Not yet.
So we don't know, right?
Right.
And, like, he obviously matters. Almost maybe walk into traffic with that fumble on the goal line last week because I bet on the Steelers, even though I thought his forward progress was stopped. But anyway, I don't think the Steelers defense will be able to stop Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense, which is not an insult to the Steelers defense. It's the ultimate compliment to the Ravens offense. And I think, I want to be clear, the Steelers are going to go to the postseason. Like, Pittsburgh's going to be a playoff team. Russ is going to take them to the playoffs. So me liking the Ravens here does not mean I think the Steelers stink or that they're not going to make the postseason. I think they will. But I do think Russ comes down to earth a little bit in this game. I think the Ravens should be a bigger favorite. I bet Ravens -3. And a couple prop thoughts that I have for this game. George Pickens yardage prop, I think, is way too low again, 65.5. We have seen the Ravens secondary struggle to stop passing, downfield passing this season. I like the George Pickens receiving yards over. And I think the Zay Flowers receiving yards over for Baltimore is too low as well. I think he gets into the 70s. So Flowers and Pickens, I like both to go over their receiving yards prop in this game.
Nick, the total in this game, I'm looking at 48.5. I don't know if I'm falling into like a sucker's bet here. I feel like it'll be one of the rare times where we see a lot of points between these two.
Donnie, I think bettors agree with you. This opened 46.5. And without getting into like the nitty gritty, there are three totals in the 40s, three numbers that matter more than the rest with the way the scoring in the NFL works. 41, 44, and 47. So the fact that this opened below 47 and is now all the way up to 48.5, this is a lot. This is not like a minor move. This is a major move in a betting market with a lot of money behind it, with people also betting the over. So Donnie, I'm not going to tell you that if you bet the over, your bet can't win. Just that, like, the move has happened already. People have already agreed with you, and the move has already happened up. Of course, like, you can still win. That 27-24, for instance, gets you to 51. You go over the total here, but, like, the value is gone on that bet. So, again, like, I'm not telling you not to make it, but just consider that for the people out there that think this is going to be, unlike your typical Ravens-Steelers game, a lot of points potentially scored on both sides.
All right, Nick. There's a bunch of really five-star type games. Let's go to Kansas City, Buffalo. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, so I never like to talk about kickers too much, but I actually think the kicking situation here, Joe, matters a lot with the Chiefs and the Bills. In case people missed it, Harrison Butker, I don't know, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on him. Here's an opinion. Not opinion, it's a fact. He's one of the best kickers in the history of the league and one of the most clutch kickers in the history of the NFL. He's on IR. So he's out the next four games. So he's not kicking for the Chiefs on Sunday. The Chiefs signed a guy, Spencer Schrader, off the Jets practice squad. Think about how bad the Jets kicking has been this year. This was a guy on the curtain-jerking jabroni from the Jets practice squad will be kicking for the Chiefs. This is a huge downgrade from Harrison Butker. And maybe in a really close game, that spells the difference here. Now, Kansas City's an underdog. Patrick Mahomes has been, by far, the greatest quarterback in NFL history, winning games outright when he is an underdog. So, like, I would never bet the Bills in this game. So I bet the Chiefs. Another way to consider guys playing Kansas City would be to tease KC, like we did last week, tease Kansas City up to +8. where the Bills have to blow them out for the bet to lose. You could pair the Chiefs with like the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday night, up to +7.5. The Miami Dolphins down to -1.5 against the Raiders. So different ways to play the Chiefs, but just do make that bet knowing that Kansas City is without its all-world kicker in this game.
Nick, this might sound like a goofy or even borderline stupid question, but is there ever a time with the betting market where people actually factor in like how lucky a team appears to be? Like Kansas City, I feel like in this example, you know, considering what happened last week, the blocked chip shot field goal, they should have lost outright to the Broncos, or, you know, some of the other things that have kind of fallen in their favor over the course of the season. Is that something as you get late in the year that actually plays any sort of factor?
So it can play a factor in the way people bet. The team that I will point to, 2019, the Green Bay Packers were like the luckiest team in the history of the league. Like one of the Aaron Rodgers, they went to maybe the divisional round or the NFC championship game, whatever. But like they were one of the luckiest. They think they got destroyed by the Niners in the NFC championship game that year. They were extraordinarily lucky the entire season, and people kept betting against them, and they kept winning and covering spreads. So point spreads are not set by results in games. Results matter in games and can kind of like change the way we view teams. But I think people should, when you handicap games, like your thought should be anchored in what the closing number of the game was. So yes, like Kansas City barely survived against Denver. Kansas City still closed more than a touchdown favorite against the Broncos. So it's almost divorcing yourself a little bit from the result of the game. The result matters, but what really matters is like how, like what was the closing line? When the millions of dollars had been bet into it, what did all that money say was the correct difference between these two teams? I think is a good way to think about it.
All right, Nick. And by the way, you can watch us on The Fan on YouTube. You can go to our website, 937thefan.com. You know, the Bengals, everybody, and part of me thinks this, they're going to rebound. They're still dangerous. Of course, they're still dangerous. But at some point, you run out of time. The math doesn't work anymore. They lose their seventh game on Sunday night, and they lose to a team that they'll probably be fighting for that last wild card spot with. That feels almost like a knockout blow. What do you make of this game?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. It's possible, you know, the Bengals could lose and then rip off six wins in a row, and like 10 would get you in. But like to your point, and the Bengals still have to play the Steelers twice, right? So
yeah,
like feels a little like, you know, season on the brink potentially for Cincinnati on Sunday night. The Bengals did get a piece of good news here, and I just want to confirm this. Just want to make sure that I'm right, because I think I am. I believe that Zach Taylor announced that T. Higgins was going to play in the game on Sunday night. I'm searching this on Twitter. Yep, T. Higgins is going to play. Zach Taylor told reporters 20 minutes ago, T. Higgins is going to play on Sunday night. That's a big deal for Cincinnati to put Higgins along with Ja'Marr Chase in this offense with Joe Burrow. And the point spread, let me just see if this has moved at all off of that. We are still sitting Chargers a 1.5-point favorite. This is a WTF game. Wrong team favored. I think the Bengals should be a small favorite in the game. I'm going to bet the Bengals on Sunday night. I'll bet the Bengals to win. The thing that worries you if you like Cincinnati, and I do like the Bengals, the Chargers coaching staff is 500 times better than Cincinnati's. So, like, you need Joe Burrow to win this game for you, and Justin Herbert's really good. I'll take my chances with Joe Burrow. I'll take the Bengals to win the game.
Nick, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it. Wishing you guys and all the great listeners, Minimal Sweats Winning Bets, the absolute very best of luck.
That's Nick Costas.
Thanks, Nick.
The host of You Better You Bet, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. So I got lost for a minute there, Donnie. Does he think it's going to be a high-scoring game? Or did he just say the betting was going that way?
He definitely said the betting was going that way, and he talked about the importance of 41, 44, 47 when you're looking at the over-under, and the betting market already has it from 46.5 to 48.5. It seemed like, though, he felt more strongly about the Ravens winning and covering that 3 points, is what I found interesting from that conversation.
Yeah, I think it is going to be the rare Steelers-Ravens game that is high scoring. I do. So many of these I mentioned. I don't remember the last 7 games in a row the Ravens haven't scored 20 in this rivalry. I would guess that Lamar missed at least four, maybe five of those. He's averaging about 20 points a game when he does play against the Steelers. They've had 26, 24, 19, and last year 10. But Donnie, kind of like this Commanders game, last year's Lamar game here, he threw a horrific pass at the end of the game, mm-hmm. maybe the worst in the NFL all season, considering the circumstances and how bad it was in the end zone. But he also had guys dropping passes left and right on him in that game. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I thought that was a game, and I remember afterwards over a year ago now, and in the afternoon, Chris and I were in the defense of, well, the Ravens probably should have won that game by 10-plus points. Like, they probably should have won that game by two touchdowns. Obviously, you know, you had your woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know, whatever on their side of things, and they end up losing the game. But Lamar Jackson was not the reason why the Ravens lost the football game in Pittsburgh last season. He had the interception, a bad one. Like you said, Joey Porter Jr. picks him off in the end zone, but he had multiple passes dropped for big gains or for touchdowns. They had the punt block, if you remember.
For a safety.
Yeah, Miles Harmon Killebrew got in there and made it happen.
Yes.
So there were multiple things that went against.
Man, that's really got to gall Harbaugh because he made his bones.
Expert.
Yeah, as a special teams guy. You know Tomlin loves that when they get a special. That's maybe why he wanted to trip Jacoby Jones on that play. He doesn't like it when Harbaugh gets the special teams advantage. That was one of the greatest moments in Steeler-Raven history, wasn't it?
The Tomlin potential trip,
yes.
Which I think he absolutely did on purpose.
I don't.
No?
No. I believe him. I believe that he was looking up at the scoreboard and got reversed on it.
He thought it was the other side of the field?
Or something, yeah. Now, I don't know what he thought.
I don't know. I always thought the smirk that he gave after, I don't want to say gave it away, but it definitely didn't make him look innocent about it.
What do you think of that one, Limits? Was that on purpose?
I think Tomlin knew what he was doing. Like, I think he knew Jacoby Jones was coming by. Maybe Tomlin didn't think it would be that close of a play, but he knows he disrupted it.
That's one of the all-timers, man. I remember the news conference the next Monday where Tomlin, a very contrite Tomlin, came in.
That was a Thanksgiving night game.
Was that incredible? God, those games were great. Was that the game where Le'Veon scored? Did they win that game?
No, they lost, but I think it was a two-point loss, I want to say.
Yeah.
I'll scroll down to it quickly.
Was it the game where Heath Miller almost got his head taken off?
They lost 22-20.
Or maybe the game where Courtney Upshaw broke Ben in half? You remember that hit? It's the second greatest hit I've ever seen on Ben. Biggest hit, I'll say. Bart Scott was number
one. Yeah, Bart
Scott
had the huge one.
Courtney Upshaw absolutely killed him.
I probably never told you about how I had to miss most of the second half of that game because it was Thanksgiving night.
Yes.
And I was in high school at this time. I worked at the Chick-fil-A inside Westmoreland Mall.
Yeah.
And they actually had people come in to Chick-fil-A, mind you, not like a retail store, at 10 p.m. on Thanksgiving night in preparation for Black Friday.
You got to call in sick.
And they scheduled
Donnie.
Me.
Yeah, that's a night you got to call in sick.
That was one of those days where they were like, basically, which I don't think was good. I don't think it was also a company policy, more so like our specific manager.
Yeah.
When they're like, you better be in a hospital bed if you can't make it in because I'm not going to buy that you're just sick.
Then I would have dialed them up and said, this is Donnie. I'm in the hospital. I can't come in. You got to call in sick on that one, Donnie.
I missed most of the second half of that game. And the first half was pretty lackluster. Just
that hurts to
bad
hear.
Offense, shaky defense, or good defense.
It's so great. This even the under the radar games. I remember Byron Leftwich scoring on like a 30-yard touchdown. Remember that when he got cracked in the ribs? Byron Leftwich.
One of the funniest touchdown runs by a quarterback in league history. In the world did nobody catch him?
He moved.
His
like,
40 time is, I think, worse than mine.
Right. He was moving like an offensive lineman, but he scored. It was incredible. And the Charlie Batch game, that was one of the most emotional Steeler games. I remember him and Ben embracing mm-hmm. at the end of that game, his final start in Baltimore, and he beat a good Ravens team.
And he kept them alive. And it came on the heels of him having, what, like seven turnovers or something disastrous in Cleveland?
Yes,
so he,
exactly.
He rebounds in a big way.
Right.
Another moment that I think of that I don't know if I would say that this sparked the beginning of Steelers Ravens. this goes back 20-plus years. I think it was 2002. I don't know if it was that divisional game that year or if it was a regular season game.
Vanica?
No, I was going to say there was a play where Jerome Bettis broke off a run to the right side, and I think he was getting ready to run over Ray Lewis, and that truck went turning the other way. Lewis stuck him, and they both popped up. They're jawing at each other. I felt like that was like one of those moments that, sparked the beginning of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There was also James Harrison planting Ed Reed on the turf at Acrisure the night that Ben had, I think, what, 5 touchdown passes in the first half?
Yeah, Harrison had like 3 sacks. He had a monster game.
That was his coming out party that mm-hmm. night. He had sacks. He had special teams plays. He recovered a fumble. It was insane. In fact, we might as well talk about it right now, some of our memories, because they're on our minds right now. Here's what he did. Here's what he did, Donnie. You ready for this? James Harrison, then relatively unknown, national television against the Ravens with Steelers legends on the sidelines that night. 9 tackles, 3.5 sacks, 6 quarterback hurries, 3 forced fumbles, 1 recovered fumble, an interception, and a TKO of Ed Reed on a punt return. It's one of the greatest individual performances in the history of this franchise or any franchise. May I read that again, Donnie?
Go ahead.
9 tackles, 3.5 sacks, 6 quarterback hurries, 3 forced fumbles, 1 recovered fumble, an interception, and he drilled Ed Reed on a punt return. So I went into the Ravens locker room and talked to people about that. They didn't want to have any of it. Trevor Price, remember him, the defensive end?
Yep.
Said to me, a little 5'9 linebacker gets 4 sacks. That'll never happen again in his life, and he knows it. So what did the savvy old news hound do? Took that quote, ran down to the Steelers locker room, and presented it to James Harris. James Harrison, you know what he said?
What'd he say?
Who is Trevor Price? Just a tremendous night, Donnie. May I tell you one more little story?
Please.
These aren't on-field memories, of course. Limits, why don't you pull up a chair? Grandpa Joe at the fireplace again.
Wow, this is a really ravished weekend of sitting by the fire.
Lighting his pipe. Would you guys like some hot cocoa?
It's a double feature.
Anybody want hot cocoa, Donnie?
I would love some.
Little marshmallows in there? This was weird, man. It was a Ravens win in 2012 at Heinz Field. And I'm in the Ravens locker room talking to Ed Reed in a scrum. And who comes into the Ravens locker room but Ryan Clark into the locker room after the not 2 hours after the game to say hello to his childhood buddy from Louisiana in the middle, like, you know, 20 minutes after the game.
Does anybody anymore in a locker room, like, you know, TJ or Cam, come up to him and say, hey, what are you doing?
That what happened, Joe?
No, but it was so odd. Nobody could believe it. And like, I went to Max Starks after that. I said, was that wasn't normal, was it? He basically said, I don't think Hines, if he went into the Ravens room after a game, would be received very well, right? Can you imagine if Hines had done that? Oh,
him and Ed Reed would have been locking horns.
Or Ray Lewis walking into the Steeler locker room. It was so weird. And Clark pretended to ask questions like he was being playful and everything. But I'm not sure how it went over with all the Ravens in that room. Anyway.
And that was just a regular season game?
That was just regular season. Those are my little anecdotes. I hope you enjoy the hot chocolate limits.
Very tasty.
How about on the field, Donnie? Greatest home. I think when we're talking about home games for the Steelers against the Ravens in this era, well, there only is this era against the Ravens. It's Troy Polamalu's interception and then everything else, right?
Yeah. I mean, a play that cements your team going to the Super Bowl.
And a legendary play. You know, if that had happened in the middle of October against the Seahawks, that's a legendary Troy play. The way he returned that ball from one side of the field to the other and evaded all those people was ridiculous.
He had three ridiculous plays in that game, and that's why
he did.
You know, maybe on the stat sheet at the end of the day, people would want to pick players like an Ed Reed over a Troy Polamalu, but he just did things in that game that embodied how he played his whole career.
Yeah,
how like you never see these things. I mean, fourth and inches for the Ravens. You have Joe Flacco. He's got a mere, 4 to 6 inches to go to get the first down?
Yes.
And Troy Polamalu leaps over the line of scrimmage like he did dozens of times, timing that play up. They don't get the first down. You think of a play early in the second half where Flacco's trying to roll outside and whiz one down the field, and here comes 43 with his hair out of nowhere like a dart, and he gets Flacco for like a 5 or 6 or 7 yard loss. And then the interception.
Yes.
Like he just made massive, impactful plays in that game. And that could have been the only game the guy ever played, and he would have been remembered fondly. It just so happened that he is one of the best safeties the league has ever seen.
That was the greatest and most memorable play in the history of this stadium, anyway. Do you have that play? Didn't you play it at the beginning of the show, Oh Limitless Wonder? And that's going to lead into one other story time with Grandpa Joe. You guys can pull up a little seat, Donnie. I'll have dessert this time. Perhaps a piece of pumpkin pie?
Oh, I love pumpkin pie.
I love pumpkin pie, too.
Cool Whip, maybe. Pumpkin pie after Thanksgiving dinner.
It's gigantic.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. You settle in for that night football game.
It's unbelievable.
Picked off Polamalu.
Oh, man.
Polamalu going right. The field is open. Aaron Smith shields Flacco. Polamalu takes it home. Super Bowl 43. Pittsburgh might be bound for that thanks to number 43.
Oh, what a call by Jim Nantz.
That gives me chills.
I have goosebumps right now. I swear to God, I have goosebumps. You do too.
I mean, I can remember the exact spot I was in. My dad and I went to that game. We were sitting up in the end zone bleachers, the end zone that Polamalu returned the touchdown.
Yeah.
Every time I see that play, chills no matter what.
Listen to the crowd. Play it again, Limits.
It's the loudest crowd reaction I've ever heard.
Picked off Polamalu. Polamalu going right. The field is open. Aaron Smith shields Flacco. Polamalu takes it home. Super Bowl 43. Pittsburgh might be bound for that thanks to number 43.
You guys are play-by-play guys. He had to think of that on the spur of the moment, right? I mean, you can't plan for something like that. What a call by him.
I've heard people criticize that call, but I've always loved it. Yeah. Like, I'll have buddies that...
Super Bowl 43 by number 43? I think that's... What don't they like about
it? See, that's my argument. I think some people just like, oh, the excitement level wasn't that high.
Wow.
I always thought that was a fantastic call.
I love the end of the call. Super Bowl 43 by number 43. That's great. I feel like there wasn't much of a lead up, though, to the interception. All you hear is just the crowd like going crazy.
Well, I think that's the
genius of Jim Nantz. I don't want to hear Jim Nantz. Yeah, I want to hear the crowd going crazy.
Him knowing that it's on TV, it's not a radio call.
Exactly. Yeah. So pull up your chairs, gentlemen. Here's a little piece of pumpkin pie for you. It's story time with Grandpa Joe again. Limits. Come on. Come on up. Come on up to the fireplace. Years later, I called Dick LeBeau and Joe Flacco to talk about this play. Love Joe Flacco. He used to go to Westminster when he was first on the Ravens and do stories. And, of course, he was at Pitt for a little while. And, you know, I wondered how he would react. I said, I'm doing an anniversary story on the Polamalu interception. He's like, all right, let's go. So Dick LeBeau, at 80-something years old, said he remembered Polamalu coming to the sidelines. Woodley had a sack.
There was
a timeout. He said he told Troy, we got to get off the field here, and I'm pretty sure the ball's going to Heap. I'm going to put you on him. You need to get the ball or knock it down. He said, gotcha. That's all he said, gotcha. He got me all right. He got Flacco is who he got. That's the quote from LeBeau. So then you go to the play itself, Limits. Are you listening here? You're looking at your phone. I need you to listen.
I was not. I was looking at this screen right here.
Come listen to Grandpa Joe. It turned out that they left Heap into pass block because LeBeau said they were concerned Polamalu would blitz, okay? James Ferrier blitzed instead, incidentally. So Polamalu started in center field and studied Flacco's eyes. Flacco looked for Mark Clayton running a late crossing route that would keep Polamalu occupied, but you don't keep Troy occupied, do you? Flacco was glued to Derek Mason up the right side, and he briefly broke open against William Gay. Okay? Are you following?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Flacco thought he had a completion, LeBeau said. Savvy old news hound goes to Flacco with the question. And by the way, Flacco did think he had a completion for a millisecond, and he got hit by James Harrison.
Yes,
just as he threw the ball. So I said, Joe, what do you remember? He said, I was young, and I probably kept my eyes on the corner stop, which was Mason's route, too long. I was staring at him a split second too long, and I think Troy just read my eyes. When the ball was halfway there, I was like, oh, geez, here we go. That's what he said. Oh, geez, here we go. I remember I was the last guy back, Flacco said, and he just hopped around me like it was nothing. How about that, Donnie?
Man, he kept it very PG for you. I would have had a few other words spewing out there if I threw that ball and I saw Troy just floating across the middle.
I think Joe gave us PG.
No. This was several years later. So, you know, what are you going to do type thing if you're Flacco? And he was very gracious in giving me that story.